Good afternoon. This is 91.3 KUAF, a listener-supported service of the School of Journalism and Strategic Media at the University of Arkansas. This is Ozarks at Large for Monday afternoon, November 25th, 2019. Ahead this hour, the Bluebirds at Terra Studios will be put out of commission sometime in the near future. Why? Explained by Ozarks at Large's Antoinette Grajeda in just a moment. And later, why 10,000 cookies are an important part of a Bella Vista fundraiser. After our show this afternoon, stay with us for Here and Now. Today, California schools are doing away with elementary and middle school suspensions. But not everyone supports this move. Sarah Lasnover, principal of the Nora Sturry Elementary School in Los Angeles, says there has to be alternatives for teachers. An exploration what those alternative forms of discipline could be on NPR's Here and Now, beginning at 1. The University of Arkansas Fort Smith holiday lighting ceremony is this evening at 5:30 at the UAFS Bell Tower. There will be live seasonal music and hot chocolate. After the official ceremony, visitors can tour the campus to see other landscape lighting. The UAFS holiday celebration continues, by the way, with the Season's Greetings concert December 3rd at 7 at the ArcBest Corporation Performing Arts Center at the Fort Smith Convention Center. This is Ozarks at Large. Terra Studios will soon suspend its hot glass demonstrations, which include the creation of its popular Blue Bird of Happiness. Artists at Terra Studios have been creating the little blue keepsakes for more than three decades, and staff members say the decision to halt their production for now is in light of the climate emergency we're facing. Ozarks at Large's Antoinette Grajeda traveled to Durham last week to visit the nonprofit to learn more, and she brings us this report.
Let's see how it's starting to turn blue a little bit.
A group of young homeschool students and their chaperones are peering through a glass window as Gary Carter shapes a glowing ball of hot glass attached to the end of a metal rod into the familiar Bluebird of Happiness.
He's going to take his Bluebird, he taps it off of the rod. There he goes. He puts this rod back in, he picks up his bird with the tongs, puts it on that base, and settles it on there. That way we can have the bluebirds on their base here. They can stand up straight.
These glass-blowing demonstrations take place from 11:30 to 4:30 daily, but they will soon be suspended, Executive Director Val Gonzalez says, because of their environmental impact.
When you think about two furnaces, because you have to be able to go back and forth, two furnaces running at 2,000 degrees for 24 hours a day for 10 months of the year, for 4 hours a day of demos, you see the kind of waste that is. It doesn't matter if we're making money, you know. It has to be about the bigger picture.
This is not a decision that was made lightly. Gonzalez says it's something that has been discussed quite a bit, and it was supported by several staff members, including their late glass blower, Dwayne Dunn.
Dwayne passed away in June of a bacterial pneumonia, and it was super sad for all of us. But as someone who had made bluebirds for 32 years, he was down with shutting down this operation. And he was retirement age, but he wasn't quite retirement age. So for him, that was a huge statement, I thought, for him to say, yeah, we need to do this. This is important. People confuse weather with this global climate crisis, and it's a thing that we really need to address, that we are engaged in what's happening.
Terra Studios' official nonprofit name is Using Art to Create a Better World, and Gonzalez sees this move as a way to do exactly that.
The more all of us talked about it, the more we, the majority of us, agreed that it was important to the planet to take a stand. Everyone says, well, I can't change, you know, I want to do blah, 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 and, you know, my little drop in the bucket's not going to make a difference. But if all of us said, well, my drop in the bucket is a drop in the bucket, and eventually if all of us put a drop in there, it'll fill up the bucket, we just decided that we were going to just take a stand, and that's what we were going to do.
She says the earliest signed bluebirds of happiness they can find are from 1983. These were originally created by Leo Ward.
The story is that Leo Ward was making brown birds because amber glass is the least expensive and most easy to do glass, okay? But there are hundreds of bluebirds that nest on this piece of property. It is amazing.
The glass bluebirds, as we know them today, came to be thanks to a suggestion from Leo's wife, Rita.
And so she said, can you make them blue? And he messed with the formula and got this beautiful Caribbean blue color, and they started selling. And so he took them to trade shows, and then they had their little studio here. And the story is that the Ozark Mountaineer magazine, and back in the day there was no internet sales, it was mail order, and so he talked them into putting an ad in the back of the Ozark Mountaineer. And that is how the Bluebirds of Happiness got started.
The guy from the magazine, Gonzalez says, is the one who suggested they be Bluebirds of Happiness, and it's now a registered trademark. The works of art gained national notoriety in the 80s when the Wards hired Jamie Ulick to manage the business while they were gone.
And he sent a bluebird to every Hallmark store in the nation. He sent out like 3,000 bluebirds for free. And Leo came back and fired him. And then had to hire him back because the orders just started rushing in. And that's when they really turned into a wholesale market that where they had to go to all the furnaces and all up the production and all that stuff.
The bluebirds come in different sizes. The ones with some flaws are called seconds and are sold for a discounted price. There are even some on display in the gallery in discontinued colors. Gonzalez says no two bluebirds are alike, just like people.
And different artists have always created them to look different ways. So this guy looks really skinny to me, and sometimes they're like really chubby, and it's just you know, who created it and how much glass they gathered, and so they're each one is an individual.
While the bluebirds have become their bread and butter, executive director Val Gonzalez says Terra Studios is more than that. They maintain about 6 acres of the property for the public. That's full of sculptures, a labyrinth, and an art gallery. Around 50,000 visitors stop by annually. That includes groups that come for team building workshops and about 2,000 kids on field trips. Going forward, Gonzalez recognizes changes will have to be made.
That it'll be okay, that we'll figure it out. We'll have to trim some costs and maybe do another kind of fundraising, but I think it'll be all right. I think that one of the comments was, oh, they're just going to go broke. And the couple board members were talking, and their response to that was, well, that will defeat our whole purpose of making a stand to do this thing. We have to survive.
She says they're looking into providing living spaces for artists and having artists demonstrate other heritage crafts like pottery and basket weaving. Gonzalez says there's a spirit of generosity in Northwest Arkansas that includes supporting the arts, and she believes people will be part of what comes next for Terra Studios.
I feel like if the community really decides to support that and support the fact that we do have demonstrations and we do have amazing art and we do have a beautiful little spot to come relax in, that we will make it and it'll be fine. And maybe it will inspire other people and other businesses to be more green and to take a stand and do what they can.
Gonzalez says they generally stop making bluebirds for the year when their crucibles crack. So when that happens this year, she says they'll likely plan a celebration to officially turn off the furnaces. That will probably be in the next month or two, but she hopes to restart the glass blowing demonstrations when a greener version of the process can be used. For now, Terra Studios will continue selling its current inventory of the Bluebird of Happiness until it runs out. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Yitzhak Grajeda.
It's almost 15 minutes after 12. The Fayetteville National Cemetery, located at 700 Government Avenue, is expanding. Director Skip Solomon says the cemetery is developing almost an acre of new land for burials.
That was donated to the National Cemetery by the Regional National Cemetery Improvement Corporation, or known in the area as RNCIC. This project is going to add roughly around 3,000 new grave sites, and it's going to extend the life of the VA Cemetery here in Fayetteville for new interments to around 2035.
In addition, 450 new in-ground cremation spaces and 600 interior building cremation spaces will also be created. According to a release from the VA, CNC Contracting in Alabama is expanding the cemetery at the cost of $2.3 million. It's scheduled for completion a year from now. Solomon says the Fayetteville National Cemetery, first developed after the Civil War in 1857, continues to grow.
And at that time, it was only 5 acres that was developed, and they only had about 1,800 grave sites available. The first burials for this cemetery were soldiers that from the Battle of Pea Ridge. And since 1867, the cemetery has expanded up to about 15 and a half acres. And we now currently have just over 9,000 grave sites occupied and roughly around 1,000 available.
The site was listed on the National Register of Historic Places a decade later and is on the Civil War Discovery Trail.
And it's important for us to complete this expansion and continue to expand our cemeteries because every veteran who honorably served their country has earned the right to be interred in the VA National Cemetery and has paid the price by the sacrifices for the country.
Burial in a VA National Cemetery is open and free of cost to all members of the armed forces and veterans who have met minimum active duty service requirements and been honorably discharged. The cemetery is open to visitors daily from sunrise to sunset. But during certain phases of the expansion project, Solomon says access to sections of the cemetery will be limited in order to maintain visitor safety. More details can be found on the Fayetteville National Cemetery's new Facebook page. Earlier this month, a set of new monuments was installed on the Arkansas Civil Rights Heritage Trail in downtown Little Rock to honor 12 African-American sharecroppers caught up in the 1919 Elaine Massacre in Phillips County. A century ago, a shootout occurred between local white law enforcement and armed African-American guards protecting a sharecroppers union meeting near Elaine. In response, 1,000 white civilians and militia attacked black residents across the county. Dr. Brian Mitchell, an assistant history professor at the University of Arkansas Little Rock, along with several of his students, did extensive research on the race riot, including trying to determine just how many people were killed.
The conservative estimates range from 15. But there are estimates as high as the mid-800s.
No white people were arrested, but 285 black men and women were taken into custody and charged with murder and rioting. 12 were sentenced to die. The NAACP intervened, and the case went to the U.S. Supreme Court. In a precedent-setting decision, which we've discussed on this program before, justices ruled the Elaine 12 defendants were denied due process and equal protection under the 14th Amendment and set free. Mitchell was on hand to help dedicate the Elaine 12 monument this month as part of the University of Arkansas Little Rock's annual Arkansas Civil Rights Heritage Trail induction ceremony.
The monument is a series of 12 medallions. They're embedded in what is the Civil Rights Trail. The Civil Rights Trail was initially established by the Joel Anderson Racist Mississippi Center under the direction of Dr. Kirk in the History Department at the University of Arkansas at Little Rock.
Speakers at the ceremony included the Chancellor of the University of Arkansas Little Rock, U.S. Congressman French Hill, Lenora Marshall, member of the Elaine Quorum Court, Kwame Abdul-Bey, co-convener of the Arkansas Peace and Justice Memorial Movement, and Little Rock Mayor Frank Scott.
It was an extremely good turnout. And what I was most impressed by were the efforts to bring in family members of the 12 so they could be recognized and see the medallions put in place.
Memorials to the Elaine Massacre have also been erected this year in Helena, the county seat of Phillips County, as well as in the town of Elaine. And still to come on today's Ozarks at Large, a salute to a rock and roll Thanksgiving tradition.
The Last Waltz is the band's legendary farewell concert. It took place on Thanksgiving 1976 at the Winterland in San Francisco. They invited out all their friends, and it started as a concert, and as they say, it became a celebration.
The Last Waltz. Celebrating our second half hour on today's Ozarks at Large.
Ozarks at Large is supported by the Center for Arkansas and Regional Studies at the University of Arkansas in Fayetteville, dedicated to the celebration and documentation of this region's history and culture. Walton Arts Center welcomes comedic entertainer, writer, and political satirist Randy Rainbow December 6th at 7:30. His popular YouTube series, The Randy Rainbow Show, is viewed by millions across all social media and digital platforms. WaltonArtsCenter.org for tickets.
This is Ozarks at Large. This month, Ozarks at Large, along with several other outlets across the country, is participating in the Purple Project for Democracy, a nonpartisan campaign dedicated to the rediscovery and recommitment of democratic values and institutions. Throughout the month, we're exploring civics, government, and public service. Today, Ozarks at Large's Zuzanna Sitek speaks with Fort Smith City Administrator Carl Gefkin about his job title.
I think many of us are familiar with having a mayor of a city, but like in your case, there are also positions like city administrator. What kind of governing bodies are there in Arkansas?
In the state of Arkansas, there are, I'll say, three main forms of municipal government. Mayor council, which is by far the most prevalent, city council manager, where there's a city manager and a board of directors, and then city administrator or council administrator, which three cities in Arkansas have that form of government, Fort Smith, Barling, and Siloam Springs. So with a or in a city administrator form of government, I, as city administrator, report to the board of directors. The board creates and sets policy. They are the legislative and executive branches of government. And I am the person that runs the day-to-day operations, implements policies set forth by the board of directors, brings policy recommendations to the board of directors, and implements all ordinances and resolutions passed by the board of directors. So really, it's the city administrator position is one that is the CEO of the city, and the board of directors, they are just that. They are the board of directors, and they set the policy and direction for the city.
And in that case, what's the mayor's role in a city that also has a city administrator?
The mayor's role is key. Technically, if you read the code, they say it's ceremonial, and that's true. However, the mayor is the person that can and does meet with the people beyond what I would do as city administrator, because I'm usually very busy trying to work with all the department heads. But he's out there being the person who listens to the residents, as do all the board of directors, works with and champions the city for new businesses or maintaining businesses. And he's also, or she, is also the person that is out in the community very frequently. And that is indeed the role of the mayor. That's why I hate to say that it's ceremonial, because it's really much more than that. It's there as a stabilizing influence as well. It's a position that I like to sit down and speak with and you know, bounce ideas off of. And so that's the role of the mayor.
So a mayor is elected by the people of the city that he or she will be overseeing. What about a city administrator? How does one become a city administrator?
The city administrator, like a city manager, is appointed by the board of directors or city council, depending on its name. Here in Arkansas, it's board of directors. So when I was hired, there was a nationwide search by a recruiting firm for which I applied, and then went through a pre-interview process, and then the recruiter presented their candidates to the board of directors, and the board chose the people they wanted to interview. And then over here in Fort Smith, it was done over a series of weeks where they met with their top three candidates, and I was fortunate enough to be chosen.
And the board of directors is elected as well?
Absolutely. We have, I believe it's the same for the city manager form of government. We have seven board of directors, four of which are elected from specific wards in the city, in this case Fort Smith, of course. And the goal is to have a near equal population allocation, and ideally, if it can be done, also the demographics. And then there are three board of directors who are elected at large. That means they are elected from the entire population of Fort Smith, and they do not represent any specific ward, but the entire city.
Thanks very much for your time.
You're very welcome.
That was Fort Smith City Administrator Carl Gefkin speaking with Ozarks at Large's Zuzanna Sitek as part of our continued civics education series. All this month, Ozarks at Large and other media outlets are participating in the Purple Project for Democracy, an effort to explore and explain civics and government. You can learn more at purplefordemocracy.org.
Welcome to 60 Second Civics, the daily podcast of the Center for Civic Education. I'm Mark Gage. The United Nations developed directly from discussions among the Allies during World War II. Even before the United States entered the war, President Franklin D. Roosevelt was encouraging the State Department to think about the relationships among nations after the war. Although the Allied leaders agreed in principle on the need for an international organization to prevent future aggression, Roosevelt was the most vigorous supporter of the idea. Roosevelt died before the founding conference of the United Nations in San Francisco. Harry Truman, who succeeded Roosevelt, gave his first major speech as president at the signing of the UN Charter on June 26, 1945. The following month, the U.S. Senate approved the charter by a vote of 89-2. The General Assembly chose the United States as the site for the permanent headquarters of the United Nations. It accepted a gift from John D. Rockefeller, Jr. to buy a tract of land on the East River in New York City, where the United Nations building now stands. That's all for today's podcast. The show's theme song is Complacent by Cheryl B. Englehart. You can find Cheryl online at cbemusic.com. 60 Second Civics, where civic education only takes a minute.
It's Monday, November 25th, 2019. This is Ozarks at Large. With me is Becca Martin Brown, features editor of the Northwest Arkansas Democrat Gazette.
This is the diet that has left the building. That's what this is.
Okay.
This is the diet that has left the building. First of all, a lovely friend of mine made me a batch of peanut butter fudge.
Mm-hmm. You like peanut butter fudge?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Which I refuse to share with anyone.
All right.
It's still in my fridge.
Okay.
And then I went out on, you know, I assigned myself to these stories. Dadgummit. And I went out to do a story about the cookie walk at Highlands United Methodist Church in Bella Vista.
Is a cookie walk like a cake walk?
Exactly, I think. I don't know. I've never been to a cake walk.
When I was a kid, we had cake walks, and it was kind of like musical chairs.
No, not like that. For this cookie walk, people of the church make... how many cookies? 10,000.
10,000 cookies. Okay.
10,000 cookies. Everybody who volunteers to make them makes 20 dozen.
Oh. Okay. That's there's volunteering and then there's
right.
20 dozen. Okay.
20 dozen. So then they have 10,000 cookies.
Well, yeah, it adds up.
And then they make I don't know how many hundred I'm showing you a big plastic coffee can here that you can't see. They cover it, they clean it, they cover it with Christmas fabric.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what you put your cookies in.
Okay.
So when you get to the cookie walk, you get like a place in line.
Okay.
And then you walk around a big square of tables and you pick out the cookies you want and put them in your coffee.
So
thing.
You get to pick them out.
Yes.
Okay. It's not random.
No.
Okay.
So you pick out one of these, two of those, six of that.
How many do you get?
As many as will fit in the coffee can.
So you pay by the coffee can.
Right.
All right.
And all of these ladies are just so enthusiastic. You know, I don't get to go out and do that kind of story as much as I wish I did, because those are the old school stories. It was so fun.
When you're putting together an event that's going to have 10,000 cookies... does someone have a spreadsheet? I mean, you want to make sure that they're not all chocolate chip. You want to make sure that there's some that are oatmeal. It's just whatever someone's going to make.
It's just random.
All right.
They talk about it.
Okay.
Because that day they were talking about somebody was going to make sugar cookies with all the bright colored sugar. And somebody thought they might make something they'd read about that was Ritz crackers with peanut butter in between and then dipped in chocolate.
Oh.
And somebody makes the Neiman Marcus recipe. And somebody makes snickerdoodles because it was her dad's favorite cookie, and so she makes it in memory of him.
When I'm walking around with my coffee can, will it tell me whether this cookie has a raisin in it or not?
Yes.
Because...
there will be somebody there that can tell you.
The best way to ruin a cookie is to put a raisin in
it. No, raisins are delicious.
Yeah, I'll go with you there. Raisins are delicious.
You just don't want them in your cookies.
Right. I want them
in
a little red box.
So raisin chocolate chip is not your thing.
No. That's how to ruin a chocolate chip cookie. Put
they
a raisin
have
in it.
One person who comes every year and only wants the cookies that have like the thumbprint and the chocolate kiss.
Thumbprint.
You know those cookies?
No.
Okay, you make a little... Why am I showing you this? Because you can't see it on air. You make a little cookie. They're usually small.
Okay.
And then you put a dollop of chocolate.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't really put your thumb in it, but you make a little hollow.
Oh, okay.
And then you put the chocolate kiss in
it. Okay, all right.
And this person only comes to get whatever cookies have the chocolate kisses.
Okay,
this is super fun. And here's the punchline. This money goes to missions, but it's missions in Northwest Arkansas. So it goes to the Northwest Arkansas Children's Shelter and the Food Bank and the Care and Share Thrift Store in Gravette and Bright Futures, which is a project of the Gravette School District and other things. And last year at the Cookie Walk, they raised $7,333.
Wow. Now, where and when, and I don't have to bring my own coffee can.
No, you do not.
All right.
Doors open at 8 o'clock on December 7th.
8 a.m. All right.
You get there at 8 a.m. because that's how you get your place in line.
Oh, and I bet there are people that are in line before they open the doors.
Probably.
Okay.
Doors open at 8:30.
Oh.
And the cookie walk lasts until 11 or until all the cookies are gone. This is at Highlands United Methodist Church in Bella Vista. It's out in what they call the Highlands on the west side. So it's like between Bella Vista and Gravette, sort of.
Do I pick up as many coffee cans as I think I need, or can I go around once, I fill up that coffee can, would I then have the opportunity to go, I want another?
Oh, yeah, I think you could get another
Or am
one.
I too late because
no.
I've already gone the circuit?
No, I think you can go the circuit again. It's $12 a coffee can.
I'm fascinated by this, if you can't tell.
Oh,
this is just fascinating to me.
Plus, they sent me back to the office with a huge chunk of homemade peaches and cream bread.
Oh, my goodness.
And a huge chunk of strawberry bread. So not only did I get rounder, but everybody in my office loved me that day.
What church is this again?
The Highlands United Methodist Church on Glasgow Road in Bella Vista.
Our Lady of the Caloric Intent.
Yes.
Yes, okay.
And you can find this story. It was on the religion page on Saturday, so you can find it online at nwaonline.com.
All right.
You also don't want to miss Karen Schottmeyer's December fundraiser calendar that is the cover of the Our Town section on Thanksgiving Day.
Right.
And it's got everything in December that is a fundraiser, the Jingle Mingle and Christmas at the Mansion and the Gaslight Gala at Clayton House and the Children's Christmas Train and the Jingle Bell Jog and Oh Night Divine, which is Mercy Health, and the Winter Dreams Home Tour, which is the Junior League.
Hence the reason you need a whole section for
this thing. Reason you need a whole thing for this calendar. And you can find that on Thanksgiving Day. And that ought to keep you busy for a minute or two.
Right. You're going to come back the day before Thanksgiving.
I am, with totally different stuff.
All right, because there's a lot of it.
Exactly.
Becca Martin Brown, features editor at the Northwest Arkansas Democrat Gazette.
What are NACLITE meteorites? I'm Caitlin Ahrens, the Pluto Manager with the U of A Center for Space and Planetary Science. And this is Scratching the Surface. NACLITE meteorites are one of three types of meteorite classes that specifically come from Mars. NACLITEs are named after the first one discovered of this type, the Nakhla meteorite, a 22-pound meteorite found in Egypt, 1911. More meteorites of this class were then found after the 1930s, mainly in Morocco and Antarctica. The largest NACLITE found to date was a 30-pound meteorite that landed in Antarctica about 50,000 years ago. NACLITEs differ from other Martian meteorites by their mineral composition. These meteorites are rich in augite and olivine, meaning they were formed from some basaltic magma, in this case estimated to be about 1.3 billion years ago. Their crystallization patterns and ages, compared with various regions on Mars, suggest that this special class of meteorites formed on the large volcanic areas, such as Tharsis or Elysium planums. In 2017, a study found that at least four different eruptions that such meteorites may have been formed from, where the augite and olivine fuse with liquid water around 620 million years ago and then ejected from Mars around 10.75 million years ago by a large asteroid impact. These meteorites are currently being compared to augite olivine crystals found in earthly volcanic areas to see how Martian volcanology may have been much slower than Earth in various points of geologic time. For more on the Center for Space and Planetary Science, or for more segments of Scratching the Surface, spacecenter.uark.edu.
Scratching the Surface with Caitlin Ahrens, the Pluto Manager, is a production of 91.3 FM KUAF in Fayetteville.
This is Ozarks at Large. The University of Arkansas women's cross-country team is bringing the 46th Track and Field National Championship to the Razorback Trophy case. Arkansas outran Brigham Young University for the national title Saturday morning. The Razorback men finished 30th in their race. The women's cross-country title is the fifth national championship for women's track and field teams at the U of A, and it means Arkansas has now claimed at least one national championship in all six categories, men's and women's cross-country, men's and women's indoor track, and men's and women's outdoor track and field. The only other program in the country to claim a national championship in at least one of all six sports divisions is Oregon. Collegiate soccer seasons are over for area teams. The University of Arkansas soccer team lost to North Carolina late last week in the second round of the NCAA tournament. The John Brown University women's team lost Saturday night in the second round of the NAIA tournament, falling to Eastern Oregon after penalty kicks. The teams had fought to a scoreless draw in regulation time. And the JBU men also made it to the second round of their national tournament before losing to Lindsey Wilson 4-1 Saturday night in Kentucky. And the University of Arkansas Fort Smith volleyball team finds out its postseason fate tonight. The NCAA Division II selection show is this evening. The bracket will include 64 teams. UAFS will need an at-large berth after losing in the Lone Star Conference semifinals in five sets to Angelo State Friday evening.
Ozarks at Large is underwritten, in part, by the Walton Family Charitable Support Foundation. Happy holidays from KUAF and Friends Holiday Giveaway, your chance to win a gift from one of many generous KUAF underwriters. Participants include Theater Squared, the Dixon Street Bookshop, Apple Seeds, and others. Winners announced December 13th during the noon edition of Ozarks at Large. KUAF.com to register.
This is Ozarks at Large. There are Thanksgiving musical traditions. There are some who like to listen to the Turkey Song by Adam Sandler. Others make it a habit to listen to Arlo Guthrie's Alice's Restaurant on the holiday. And there are still others who may include a listener viewing of The Last Waltz in their holiday festivities. The film and soundtrack were recorded during a Thanksgiving Day concert in 1976 by the band. This week, a local tribute to The Last Waltz will be staged at George's Majestic Lounge in Fayetteville. The core of the musicians who will perform as the band include Garrett Brolin on guitar and vocals, Derek Russell on drums and vocals, Lee Zadrow and Adam Becker on keyboards, Dave Gusalo on bass, and Robert Locke on vocals. Earlier this month, Ozarks at Large's Timothy Dennis welcomed the group to the Furman Garner Performance Studio to give us a preview of Wednesday night's concert.
When your arms are empty, got nowhere to go, come on out and see, it's a show. Well, you see saints and sinners, you see losers and winners, all kinds of people you might want to know. But once you get it, you can't quit it.
You can't quit it.
But it's Walcott's Medicine Show.
Looking for the real thing, he can show you where it went.
Well, he's a young faith healer, he's a woman stealer, but he can cure by his command. And when the music's hot, then you might have to stand to hear the Klondike Ku Klux Steamboat Band. Don't you get it? You can't quit it.
No, you can't quit it.
But it's Walcott's Medicine Show.
Well, I'd rather die happy than to not die at all.
brown fox with bright diamonds in her teeth. She's pure gold down underneath. Well, she's a rock and roll singer and a true death hanger. Boy, something like you ain't ever seen. But don't you get it? Oh, you can't quit it.
No, you can't quit it.
Love it is Walcott's medicine show. Yeah, that is Walcott's medicine show. Yeah, W.S. Walcott's medicine show. W.S. Walcott's medicine show.
For those of our listeners who are not familiar with what it is, tell us briefly, what is The Last Waltz?
The Last Waltz is the band's legendary farewell concert. It took place on Thanksgiving 1976 at the Winterland in San Francisco. They invited out all their friends, and it started as a concert, and as they say, it became a celebration.
So why are y'all putting on this tribute show to The Last Waltz?
Not for money, obviously. I think everybody here's probably wanted to do this. I know a lot of people locally have wanted to see it happen. We started kind of chatting it this summer, and then I guess we just kind of decided to go ahead and let's just do it and put together the band and get the guests in, and now we're doing it. So
how'd y'all come together as the core of the band?
Well, I chatted Garrett about it first, and then we kind of drafted in Derek.
That would be me.
And then Garrett and Derek kind of drafted in everybody else who's playing, so.
Yeah, I mean, between everyone in the air, we all play in local bands. So we just all kind of know each other through the scene and all respect the band. So it was pretty easy to get the core group of guys dedicated to try to do it, you know, so.
And you've not only got the people who are sitting at this table participating, you've got quite a few special guests involved as well, right?
We do. Lots of guests. Earl Kate, Ben Miller, Jeff Kearney from One House Jig. We've got Willie Carlisle, Eric and Meredith from Lost John. So it's going to be a pretty star-studded show, you know.
Jamie Lou,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
And these guests are performing as the guests that
as the
would
guests
have been
in the last waltz.
That's right.
Yeah, so if you show up, you can see Willie Carlisle do some Ronnie Hawkins, and Brian Martin from Sad Daddy will be doing some Van Morrison. We've got a few surprises that we'll save for the night of.
How did y'all put together that guest list, just out of curiosity? I mean, how did you decide who would be who, or did you just decide who you wanted?
That's
and
a
they
good
decided?
Question.
Okay, I guess kind of started on who we thought might do those particular songs the best. If you like with like Jeff Kearney, he's kind of got that Dr. John voice kind of going anyway, so it made sense for him to do that. But I mean, people, we initially had ideas for someone to do one song, then they asked to do something else, so we kind of moved some things around. But it really wasn't that hard on finding someone to do this particular part, you know.
Virgil Kane is a name, and I served on the Danville train. To Stone Man's Calvary came, and it tore up the tracks again. In the winter of 65, we were hungry. Just barely alive. By May the 10th, Richmond it fell, and it's a time I remember oh so well. The night they drove old Dixie down, and all the bells were ringing. The night they drove old Dixie down, and all the people were singing. They with my wife in Tennessee, and one day she called to me, said, Virgil, quick, come and see, there goes Robert E. Lee. Now I don't mind chopping wood, and I don't care if your money's no good, just to take what you need and you leave the rest, but you should never have taken the very best. The night
like my father before me. I will work the land, and like my brother above me, who took a rebel stand. He was just 18, proud and brave, but then a Yankee laid him in his grave. And I swear by the mud below my feet, you can't raise a cane back up when he's in defeat. The night they drove old Dixie down, and all the bells were ringing. The night they drove old Dixie down, and all the people were singing. They went na 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 na. The night
So are y'all doing the soundtrack to The Last Waltz? Are you doing the full like set list of what they did that actual day, or
mixture of both? I mean, you know, the original set list is what, like 40 songs.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So obviously we're not going to do an entire 4-hour show. Mm-hmm. We don't have enough time, space, or people for that.
Yeah.
But you know, we're picking some of the ones that aren't on the actual recorded video. You know. Like W.S. Walcott, you know, I mean, you're not going to see that one on there. It's just one of our personal favorites we kind of picked up out of there, you know.
How'd y'all narrow down the list from, you know, 40 to about 24?
You know, we tried to get a healthy mix of stuff people know and, you know, the deeper cuts. But, you know, we knew we were going for a, you know, 2.5-hour kind of show. So it was definitely hard to cut some tunes, just because, you know, it's hard to find a, you know, a loser in the batch. They're all just classic tunes. But you know, there are a few in there that's like, well, this wouldn't, you know, be feasible to get a full, you know, orchestra up here to do this.
The resources is kind of a deciding factor in a lot of that as well.
So how close to the original tunes are you playing these? I mean, are you playing them pretty close to how the band played them, or are you kind of switching it up a little?
We're going off the Last Waltz versions.
Okay.
We're trying not to dig to listen to the studio cuts of them. So me personally, I mean, I've been trying to just listen to the Last Waltz versions.
Yeah, because there are differences from the studio versions. So if we weren't listening to the same tunes, we'd be playing different versions. So kind of helps.
Now, in the Last Waltz, they had a horn section. Are you all going to have a horn section?
We do, and we will.
It won't be as large as theirs, but we do have one.
Okay.
Yeah, we have a couple guys, Michael Hanna, Spencer Barker, and
that's Patty Steele.
And Patty Steele.
So,
and you never know, there might be another guest that hops on there and gets with it.
Yeah, we've had, once we announced, we started getting people messaging us and like, hey, can I get on this? And some of them have made it, some of them haven't, because it's just kind of hard to start fitting people in last second. Right. But
and it's the holidays, and people are gone. And, you know, again, we're all musicians, we stay busy, so. You know, we were fortunate to catch these guys that are doing the project while they weren't doing anything, you know, so that's a big part of it as well.
Still burns. else known love, as true as a love that dies untold, and the clouds never hung so low before. Thank you.
Robert Locke, Adam Becker, Lisandro, Dave Griseldo, Garrett Brolin, and Derek Russell performing inside the Furman Garner Performance Studio at KUAF. They spoke with Ozarks at Large's Timothy Dennis. The last waltz tribute concert takes place Wednesday night at George's Majestic Lounge in Fayetteville. Tickets are $10 in advance. Music begins at 9 Wednesday night. For more information, we have a link to the event at ozarksatlarge.com.
Support comes from the Farmer's Table Cafe, serving locally sourced farm-to-table breakfast and lunch Tuesday through Sunday. Located at 1079 South School Avenue in Fayetteville, thefarmerstablecafe.com for menus and more. 91.3 is supported by the Walmart Museum, a family-friendly experience featuring interactive displays on the history of Walmart, Walton's Five and Dime, and the Spark Cafe Soda Fountain. Located on the square in downtown Bentonville, open daily until 9 p.m. Admission is free. 273-1329 or walmartmuseum.com.
Contributors to the show today included Antoinette Grajeda, Zuzana Sitek, Timothy Dennis, and Jacqueline Froelich. Jacqueline delivered information about the Fayetteville National Cemetery expansion and the Elaine Historical Trail. Scratching the Surface is written and hosted by Caitlin Ahrens and produced by Pete Hartman in the Nancy Blair Operations Studio. Thanks to Becca Martin Brown from the Northwest Arkansas Democrat Gazette for her help today. She will be back with us on Thanksgiving Eve to offer shopping opportunities away from the big box stores for Black Friday. Our theme is written and performed by Daryl Sean. You can find out more about Daryl at darylsean.com. His most recent CD is titled Safe in Sound. Ozarks at Large is a production of 91.3 KUAF. Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Rogers, and Vaughn. 91.3 KUAF is a listener-supported service of the J. William Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences at the University of Arkansas. You can find out more about the show and listen to past editions as well as individual stories and interviews and share them with friends and family by going to ozarksatlarge.com. We will be back tomorrow at noon and 7 with another brand new edition of Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums. Thanks so much for spending part of your Monday with us. Have a great rest of your Monday.